Purport. Everyone is searching for Krishna in the different aspects of his manifestations. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is partially realized in his impersonal Brahman Jyotir refulgence and as the all-pervading Supersoul, excuse me, dwelling within everything, including the particles of atoms. But Krishna is fully realized only by his pure devotees. Consequently, Krishna is the object of everyone's realization, and thus anyone and everyone is satisfied according to one's desire to have him in the transcendental world also. Krishna reciprocates with his pure devotees in the transcendental attitude, just as the devotee wants him. One devotee may want Krishna as supreme master, another as his personal friend, another as his son, and still another as his lover. Krishna rewards all the devotees equally according to their different intensities of love for him. In the material world, the same reciprocations of feelings are there, and they are equally exchanged by the Lord with the different types of worshippers. The pure devotees, both here and in the transcendental abode, associate with him in person and are able to render personal service to the Lord and thus derive transcendental bliss in his loving service. As for those who are impersonalists and who want to commit spiritual suicide by annihilating the individual existence of the living entity, Krishna helps also by absorbing them in his effulgence. Such impersonalists do not agree to accept the eternal, blissful personality of Godhead. Consequently, they cannot relish the bliss of transcendental personal service to the Lord, having extinguished their individuality. Some of them, who are not firmly situated even in the impersonal existence, return to this material field to exhibit their dormant desires for activities. They are not admitted into the spiritual planets, but they are again given a chance to act on the material planets. For those who are fruitive workers, the Lord awards the desired result of their prescribed duties, as the Yajneshwar, and those who are yogis seeking mystic powers are awarded such powers. In other words, everyone is dependent for success upon his mercy alone, and all kinds of spiritual processes, are but different degrees of success on the same path. Unless, therefore, one comes to the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, all attempts remain imperfect, as is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Akama sarvakamova moksha kama udarati tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Whether one is without desire, or is desirous of all fruitive results, or is after liberation, one should with all efforts try to worship the Supreme Lord for complete perfection, culminating in Krishna consciousness. Omegana Timurandasya Giranjana Shalakaya Chakshura Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurve Nama Sri Chaitanya Mahavishnam Stavitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. It's when I first encountered this verse, I was a bit bewildered by it because the devotees were saying, you have to join the Hare Krishna movement, you have to shave your head, wear a sikha, and wear these robes and live in this particular temple, in this particular street. Otherwise, you're not really a devotee. And this was saying something completely different, that Krishna reciprocates with everyone. All, as they surrender unto me, I give to them accordingly. And the secret is in the surrender. Amanitvam, in the 13th chapter, Krishna says, he discusses the qualities that you need to acquire knowledge. And we need something to acquire knowledge, just like we need something to listen to music. Ears. We can be here, the music can be there, but if we don't have something, some ability to receive the music, it can't be received. Knowledge is the same. We need something to be able to receive the knowledge. How can we, what antenna do we have up? So Krishna gives a whole list of qualities of virtues in many cases. And the first one is amanitvam. Amanitvam, manaha, means self-respect, self-regard, or self-conceit. And amanitvam means not that. So the English word possibly would be humility, but Prabhupada describes it in the purport as not being anxious to be honored by others, to be in that frame of mind, and that's the frame of mind of Trinadapi Sunichina, this wonderful verse, Amanina Madanina, not to expect respect from others and not to and be willing to give all respect to others. It's a very difficult thing to follow. But interestingly, if we're not absorbed in the need for self-respect, self-regard, and this quality is actually due to us, it's based on qualities that we actually have, on talents that we have, on gifts given by Krishna. We're very good at this or we're very good at that, which is not the issue. The issue is we want respect based on that. And if people don't give it to us, we feel a little hurt. And this is an open wound in our life. It's always constantly there being reopened all the time when we're not given what we think is due. We didn't get enough of it as a child. We can spend a lot of money establishing that fact. So we go through life expecting respect. And this Trinadapi verse says we shouldn't expect that respect. It's not due to us. It's not important. But if it becomes important to us, it's all-absorbing. And when we stand in front of the deity in the temple, who is the Thakur in the room? Who is the deity? Us looking, wondering who's looking at me now? Am I standing correctly? Do I have my hands in the appropriate position? Or is it the Lord on the altar? Because for the amount that it's our self-absorption, our need for respect for being a devotee. I've dressed up correctly this morning. This morning I took the trouble to wear a dhoti. I put it on properly. Nice tilak. So you get appropriate respect. And if I don't get it, I'm a little disappointed. Just another day of disappointment in my life. And we become more and more disappointed in life. And none of that is about Krishna. None of that is about a relationship with anyone else, a real relationship with anyone else. We get married and we expect our partner to respect us in a certain way. That is totally unrealistic because your partner in life is going to find out every little thing about you. And some of it is just not very respectable. The smell of your breath when you're sick. And all your little foibles. And if we can't accept that, we can't have a relationship. And we can't have a relationship with Krishna if we're expecting respect from Krishna. And we're expecting the respect we think we're due. Yes, this verse is saying that Krishna is willing to give us more than we could imagine. So we have limited our capacity to have a relationship with Krishna or anyone else just by this idea of self-conceit, self-respect, this demand we have in the world. And this is why Krishna says it is the first thing. I was always a bit bewildered why it was the first thing. Humility was kind of really, you know, I don't know. It's not very significant, is it? What can you do with it? You can't fight a battle with it. Well, it turns out that Arjuna did fight a battle based on humility. Humility is stronger than being a kshatriya. You need more courage to be humble than to fight. This is the real challenge. It's a very personal challenge. And when we hear Trinadapi Sunichina, when we hear this verse and the idea of humility, it's very enthusing to us. When we meet someone who's actually humble, we feel very enlivened. We're struck by that person because it's so rare. But it's so attractive to us. It's very difficult to grasp. Because I feel humble now. Immediately not humble anymore. So, Krishna's offering us something. He's offering everyone something. And this verse gives us the hint. It's just a hint. I'd like to go over just some other... I just took the time to... just go over mainly from the Gita. Poor Arjuna, he thought that he'd lost the plot and he'd lost his relationship with everyone and he couldn't figure out what was going on. And he asked Krishna for help. He has a breakdown on the battlefield, and it is very much the symptoms of a real breakdown. But it becomes an extraordinary breakthrough. He has a completely transformative experience based on this breakdown, based on the thing that he thinks is the worst thing ever. Yet it becomes the best thing ever for him. And how does this happen? And this is all based on Krishna's reciprocation with him. How Krishna deals with him in that 1 hour of conversation on the battlefield. He's having the worst day of his life. And this happens to everyone. Happens to a four-year-old child who doesn't get the sweets. For a child, that's the biggest thing. Peace in the Middle East? Forget that. That's got nothing to do with life. You know, the war in Ukraine? No, it's the fact that there's sweets right there, right in front of my eyes, and my mother isn't willing to give me those sweets. It's the biggest thing in the world. Romeo and Juliet. She was 12, he was 14. Yet they both committed suicide. They both died because of unrequited love. Because of their love for each other, their attachment, so strong. Young teenagers, that's why the story is evocative. Everyone recognizes that the first crush, and it totally crushed them, but we all understood it, the intensity of feeling, that at every stage in life, we have this intensity today. This is the biggest thing that ever happened. But when you're four, it is the biggest thing that ever happened, because nothing has happened. When you're a young teenager, nothing's happened in your life. You've never had to deal with hormones before, and all of a sudden there's hormones swimming all through your system and you see a girl or a boy, it's like, totally in love. You've no idea what love is, obviously, it's just hormones. But, and every stage in life, you lose your parents at some stage. Worst thing that could ever happen, all your shelter is gone, you're an orphan. You could be 20, could be 30, could be 60. And still it will crush you because they've always been there. So many crises. Arjuna had this crisis, the same crisis that we all have. But Krishna, he gave him the absolute freedom to choose. He didn't take that from him. We could think that Krishna could have solved his problem immediately by just wiping out everyone that was bad on the battlefield, and then Arjuna wouldn't have to fight. So it wouldn't be Arjuna's problem. They say that if you pray to God to move a mountain, you'll wake up in the morning with a shovel at the end of your bed, because it's our work to do. We may have the desire that this is what we want to do. Arjuna had he was trained all his life to be a warrior. That was his raison d'etre in life. That was his purpose. His mentality was such. His body was built like that. He had the instinctive reactions of a warrior. Yet on the day he was called to fight, he wasn't willing to fight. So he was really in a difficulty. Krishna gave him the tools. He gave him the perspectives that he needed to make a choice. He gave him more perspectives than he could have imagined. Some of them were material, some of them were spiritual. And he said, this is what I think you should do. Now you choose what you wish to do. And Krishna gives us all that choice. That's his reciprocation. That's love. He doesn't take that choice from us. Because without that choice, we can't choose to love him. we can't choose to have a relationship of love. We can't have a relationship of love unless we have absolute freedom. And Krishna gave it to Arjuna. He said, you're not obliged to me. He said that in the very first text of teaching. He said, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings. He said, you are eternal. You were never born. You will never die. Therefore, Krishna has no obligation, Arjuna has no obligation to Krishna. He has an obligation for the body, the mind, but not for himself. He himself was not created by Krishna. We are not created by God. Because we never had a beginning and we don't have an end. That's a very profound understanding. So Arjuna didn't have to worship him as the creator God. Our essence, our spiritual essence, is at one with Krishna. It's the same energy as Krishna, eternal by nature. So he gave him this absolute freedom to choose. This is a very profound gift. The greatest gift that we can understand. This is not simply philosophy. This becomes the basis of love. Possibility of love. So he has allowed Arjuna to choose love. That's why he fought. Not because of philosophy or religion or dharma or jnana or dhyana yoga or all the other things mentioned. He fought because of his attachment to Krishna, because of his love for Krishna. He just wanted to please Krishna. I have all these notes and I've wandered all over the place here and these have no relevance anymore. it's wonderful, the 12th chapter where Krishna gives a to-do list and it's very connected with this text. All is they surrender unto me. We're told that this is the standard, this is the only way, this is the only way you can approach Krishna or practice Krishna consciousness. But Krishna says in the 12th chapter, become my devotee, meditate upon me, worship me. If you can't do that, follow the rules and regulations. If you can't do that, meditate. If you can't do that, give in charity. If you can't do that, it's a whole to-do list. There's always a possibility of serving Krishna. There's always a possibility of doing something to please Krishna. Krishna makes no barrier. There's no religious barrier. There's no philosophical barrier. There's no cultural barrier. There's no social barrier. There's no political barrier. He just makes it crystal clear. If you want to approach me, please approach me. If you offer me with love, a leaf, a flower, water, fruit, I'll accept it. These are the easiest things to obtain. If you can't accept water, you're dead. You know, if you can't source it, everyone can get water, a leaf. We say it's a tulsi leaf, but any leaf, any flower, any piece of fruit. He makes it so easy to approach him. That's his reciprocation. We're the ones making it difficult. It's our mana. It's our self-regard. We've debarred ourselves, we've shut ourselves off, we've taken down the antenna, we're not receiving those waves. We can't hear that subtle message. But Krishna is shouting from the rooftops, I love you. And here's how you can love me. And we choose all kinds of the weirdest paths to get to him, the most contrived ways. We decide it's going to be this kind of yoga where I literally tie myself up in knots. Or mental yoga, where we tie ourselves up in knots. There's so many religions, so many ways of approaching Krishna. And Krishna is saying, it's all fine, don't worry about it. Just take one, get going. I will reciprocate with you according to how you want to reciprocate with me. It's completely up to us, our relationship with Krishna. His relationship is assured. And our difficulty is that we forget that. We forget that our relationship with Krishna is absolutely assured. We have no difficulty with it. Actually, uh, In 6:30, yes, I'll hit on my notes. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever never lost to me. That's such a reassuring verse. These reassuring verses are littered throughout the Gita and the Bhagavatam and absolutely the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Krishna talks about Bhaktosi Me Sakachati. He says, I'm telling you this because you're my devotee and my friend. And then he says in the ninth chapter, Suhrit, you are my most intimate friend. And in the tenth chapter, he says, Priyamanaha, thinking you dear to me, I do this for your benefit. Bhaktimam ya same priyaha, in the 12th chapter, he says this after six verses. He says, Priyostime, priyostime, same priyaha, because I love you, because I love you. Because this is the reason why Arjuna fights. Because in the 12th chapter, which is the shortest chapter, but it's the most significant chapter, because Krishna declares his love for Arjuna before Arjuna declares his love for him. Now, as the conversation goes on, Krishna says, this is the king of knowledge. This is confidential knowledge. Then later, this is most confidential knowledge. This is more confidential knowledge. And as it becomes more confidential, then Krishna is able to express himself. But Krishna is the one leading the conversation. Krishna is the one revealing himself, opening himself up to have a relationship so that Arjuna can reciprocate. This is the perfect example of this verse. As we surrender, he reciprocates. As we open ourselves up in relationship, we allow him to open himself up to us. Nobody's going to open themselves up to someone who comes in front of them every day and say, today I want exam results. Next day, today I want my child to get married to a wonderful person. Today I want a BMW. Today I want... So if someone comes up to you every day, knocks on your door and has this list of things that they want, what kind of relationship are you going to have with them? It's going to be kind of brief. You know, as soon as possible, you want them away from your door. Why? Well, there's love in the house, and this isn't it. So if we open ourselves up to relationship, Krishna can relate to us. We have to let him in. We have to open the door. It was Arjuna's choice to decide to fight, to please Krishna. Krishna didn't force him. He gave him the choice. And in each of our cases, we all have choices to make. And the choices are about our relationship with Krishna. How do we serve Krishna so that he can reciprocate? So that we can feel the love that he has for us? That's what's on offer. And we debar ourselves from that love by the damage that we've inflicted upon ourselves in this world. Nobody else has inflicted this damage. We have to take full responsibility. Otherwise, we can't get out of this. This is no one else's fault. We decided to come here. And myself and my friend, Nitai Sachinandan, we used to meet and read the Krishna book every week. And he said to me one time, he said, coming to this material world is like we insist on coming to enjoy. To enjoy separately, no one's looking at us, we just enjoy by ourselves, and it looks very attractive. And we walk in the door of the material world, the door opens, we walk in, and someone comes and punches us in the face, as soon as we walk in the door. And then immediately we're saying, what did I do? I didn't do. And then someone steps on our toe, hey, come on, what's this about? And that's the whole material world. That's how it goes on from there. Just these crazy relationships. Jai Radha Gokulananda, Sitaram, Lakshmananda, and Gornitai. We end up in these insane relationships and blaming each other and you know, you did this and you did this. If it wasn't for this, then this wouldn't have happened. And that's very unfortunate. But Krishna goes on saying to Arjuna, you are my friend, I love you, you are my friend, I love you, reassuring him throughout the whole thing until in the 12th chapter he just says, I love you because of my love for you, because of my affection for you. So Priya is a very important part of the Bhagavad Gita. It's the most important part of the Bhagavad Gita. It's the reason why Arjuna opens up. It's the reason why Arjuna makes his choice. It's the reason why any of us are going to make a choice. If someone tells us they love us, that breaks down so many barriers. We become beholden to that person. It's a real relationship. It's not based on I am the creator, you will worship me. If you don't, horrible things will happen. It's based on take your choice. And if you make that choice, you know that that person has real regard and real affection. You feel it, you see it, how they've dealt with you. How Krishna deals with Arjuna after Arjuna asks for help. It's the most significant verse in the Gita. After Arjuna asks for help, Krishna's relationship with him changes clearly. Up to that point, Arjuna is saying, oh, I can't fight, and he's giving his reasons, and Krishna looks at him and says, you sound like a eunuch. You know, it's like it's a terrible insult to a kshatriya, but it's obviously among friends. He's just saying, he said, what? You sound like an idiot. What are you talking about? It's like two guys in the pub, and one guy says something, and the other guy says, blah. It's not a serious thing. But when Arjuna asks for help, it is a serious thing. Now it's become serious. Now he really needs help and he's taking shelter of Krishna. And directly after that, in the verse, Krishna smilingly, he has a little tiny smile on his face because Krishna knows now there's the possibility of a real relationship. And then the relationship begins. And Krishna is the one who opens up, takes the risk of a relationship by giving his heart a little bit, giving his heart a little bit. When we give our heart to someone in a relationship, they can take advantage. They can hurt us. So Krishna just gave it a little bit at a time so that Arjuna could reciprocate appropriately. And of course Arjuna did. Arjuna asks a lot of questions. They're all very relevant questions, intelligent, pertinent questions. So Krishna knows this is really happening. This is a proper conversation among friends. He really wants to know, so I'll tell him. I'm Krishna, you're Arjuna. We can be in love. We can have this loving relationship. And the material context isn't that important. And in terms of reciprocation, in the Bhagavatam, over and over and over, Krishna says that he can't reciprocate with the love of the devotees. He just thinks it's too much. The love of the devotees overwhelms him. He doesn't see how he can reciprocate with it. He says that to the gopis. I can't reward you. I can't give you anything more than what you've given me. And he says that consistently. This is how Krishna feels, that he's so overwhelmed by that love, because that love is so freely given. And he's so happy to accept it, that he becomes more happy. And because he becomes more happy, the gopis become more happy. And the different devotees he's relating to become more happy. And that's the happiness we all yearn for in life. And Krishna's offering it to us. But we forget, constantly forget, that Krishna loves us. Somehow we think Krishna's out to get us. He's gonna arrange things in such a way that I'm actually going to suffer and it's going to be his fault. And why do we think like that? Because we suffer. If we suffer and devotees say, if you become a devotee, then everything is Krishna, it's not karma anymore. So then he's responsible. But it's not like that. We're living in the material world. The material world is just the material world. It's got material laws. There's enjoyment and there's suffering. And we just accept that suffering. We don't blame Krishna for it. We decided to come here. We blame ourselves for it. Whatever suffering comes, comes. Arjuna's suffering. He's really in anxiety. He really has a breakdown. He's completely lost it. the worst day of his life, and he turns to Krishna for help, and Krishna helps. Crisis means Krishna for a devotee. Let these calamities happen again and again so that I can, you know, love you again and again, so I can find that love for you again and again. That's what it means. The material circumstance isn't the important thing. The important thing is how we respond to it, how we find Krishna. We look for Krishna. As soon as the crisis happens, immediately our antenna is up. Ha ha! Krishna. Crisis means Krishna. I know what's going on here. Krishna's in here somewhere. There's something in here for me. I need to learn something. I need to do something for him. In my personal life, I was told as a young devotee, you jump into service, you take it, you with a heart and a half, you do everything and you make that service your life. So every service I made my life, but unfortunately then every time Krishna wanted me to do something else, he had to beat me around the ears, he had to prise my fingers from my service. He had to make my life so difficult that I had no choice but to do something else. And sometimes it was quite extreme. So one time it was so extreme, I lost everything. I was kicked out of my service, I was kicked out of the temple, everything. I was persona non grata. And I went to my in-law's house. It was Christmas time, we were going there anyway. My father-in-law opened the door, my wife and her are standing there, and my father looked at me and says, "Oh my God, what happened to you?" It was just my face. I was just gray. I was just bereft. You know, where's Krishna in my life? I had no idea what's going on. You know, I'm kicked out of, I'm, you know, debarred from Krishna. What is it? So my wife took me upstairs. She said, he's okay. Took me upstairs, sat me down, gave me a Bhagavatam and said, "You just read that. I'll go down and take care of them." So I opened up the Bhagavatam and just prayed to Krishna, help. I opened up the Bhagavatam and the first line in the middle of a purport in the first canto, "Any difficulty in the life of a devotee is directly the mercy of the Lord." That's fairly obvious then, isn't it? So this is Krishna. I haven't been debarred from Krishna. This is Krishna. So what's the issue here? So I took 6 months to do sadhana, just chant and read and just discern, what does he want? So I just chanted and read for 6 months. And at the end of 6 months, literally on the day, was when I started off a completely new service that transformed me, my life, my perspective, possibilities of service, possibilities of Krishna consciousness, of serving others. So we don't know the crisis in our life, how it's going to transform us in a completely positive way. It's where Krishna wants us to go. But what does it mean? It means your parents die. It can be dramatic. Krishna can really change things up. It means we have an accident and we lose a leg. Every crisis, no matter how difficult, means Krishna for a devotee. There's always an opportunity, and the opportunity is greater than the one before. So Krishna is more than willing to reciprocate with us. It's all he wants. All we have to do is say, "Help," like Arjuna. All we have to do is say, "I want this, Lord." It's kind of like, as they say in America, bring it on. Because when we do say that prayer, things will change. And we have to be ready for that change, ready to accept that change. That this is what Krishna wants me to do. Let me do it with a heart and a half. So there's just some thoughts to help us in our journey towards Janmashtami. I hope they've been helpful in some way. If anyone has anything to add to that or subtract from that, or if anyone wants to fight about it, I'm Irish, we like that too.
In terms of surrender, what are the obstacles that are stopping us surrendering, and what are the things that help us? Like, if there were three things that stop us, prevent us from surrendering, and just some key things that help us to surrender. Would you be able to?
Well, two things that will stop us. One is a lack of humility. The other is the second word that Krishna mentions in the 13th chapter, Damaha, which is not exactly if we have something that we're good at and we're proud of and we want respect, that's lack of humility. Damaha is when we're looking for credit for something that we didn't do, some quality that we don't have. And that's also a real barrier in life to relationship of any kind. So looking for that is detrimental, very detrimental. If you say asking for three things that we could do to attract Krishna, for me, there's kind of only one thing: serve. There's always something we can do. Even if we're in a wheelchair with one leg, we can sit in our house and we can write mantras on a piece of paper and throw it out the window and let people catch it. I mean, there's always something we can do. You know, we can serve. And by service, we've all experienced this. Someone comes to the temple and they be around devotees or around kirtan and classes and everything. When we give them service to do, it's the classic thing of the devotee comes and hands you a broom and says, if you clean the room, you'll clean your heart. You know, and you end up cleaning the floor. That actually transforms people. We've all seen that with young devotees coming. They kind of get it. Service transforms us. It's the way we reciprocate. Love is a verb. It's something we do. It's not conceptual. It's something we do. And that's why Prabhupada defines it as devotional service. So bhakti means to share. It has so many meanings. But Prabhupada defines it as devotional service, as do other acharyas. It's dynamic. It's action. It engages us, our senses, our mind. It's a meditation. It's everything. Our service becomes everything to us. It becomes our relationship, our way of connecting with Krishna. So to have a service is the most important thing. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur used to talk about service concern. He said we should be more concerned about our service than anybody else, including our guru. Our guru gives us the possibility, the platform. He gives us something to do. But how we do it, how we grasp it, how we develop it, how we make it into something that our guru would never have imagined. You know, would Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur have imagined all the temples, the type of temples, 17 temples in Delhi? Just Delhi? You know, that's like, who was thinking like that? So it's like in Oxford, so I work in Oxford, and if someone is supervising a student doing a PhD in Oxford, the supervisor expects the student to be more of an expert on the subject at the end of their study than the supervisor. Otherwise, they think they failed. So you're an expert in this thing. The student is studying this. It's a part of what you do, but they're looking at it from a new angle, a new vision. So we should be doing service with that mood, that we want to do service and do more than anyone expected, more than anyone thought possible. Otherwise, how did the manor come? How did any temple come? Someone walked off and plunked themselves down. We could plunk ourselves down in Manchester or Leeds. Leeds has, 65,000 students? It's a university town. Tons of preaching opportunities there. We could plunk ourselves down with £10 in our pocket and start chanting Hare Krishna and Hari Hari, hope for the best. And Krishna will reciprocate. Myself and a devotee were dropped off in Belfast in Northern Ireland in 1979. It was £50. And it was a war zone. And we were told to start a temple. So we took our £50. We found a place. And the deposit was £50. That was it. We had no money, no food. And Krishna's kind. We survived. We can do anything, but we have to do something. And whatever we do, take it seriously. We could become the best cook ever. We could become the best Sankirtan devotee ever by chanting Hare Krishna, by talking to people, by just being kind to people. That could be our service, just being kind. That's a wonderful sadhana. So service, you ask for three things, I've given you a million things. The possibilities are endless. I mean, I ended up in Oxford starting a center for Hindu studies that's associated with the university. I never went to university. I lived in an ashram for 12 years. Anything is possible. Krishna will make anything happen. Because he wants to enliven us. He wants us to be happy in Krishna consciousness. He's full of love for us. He's so kind. And we have to understand that. We have to appreciate that, accept that, and never reject it. Never say, I'm not worthy. He couldn't love me. All that stuff. That's all, you know, psychology stuff. It's not true. It's simply not true. We're absolutely worthy because we are eternal servants of Krishna. Krishna loves us, and there's nothing we can do that will debar that love. No crime that we can commit, and he still won't love us. It's absolute true love. And we can have that if we want it. We just have to want it. And the barriers, just get rid of them. But the process of getting rid of them, I'm quite convinced, is service. Because it does. That, you know, you brush the floor and you purify your heart. That works. That's actually the process. That's how it actually works. So with that, our time has come. Time is eternal, but not at Bhaktivedanta Manor. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.